I'm Kathleen Von Kampen from St. Paul, Minnesota. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge from KFUO Radio.
You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
We have an iron ladle today. I am so excited for this.
Mm-hmm.
It is one word. Soup.
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 We haven't ever had like a true focus on soup.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm so ready for this right now. Erin, what do you got for us?
Well, it's soup.
okay, moving on.
No, because, I mean, it's winter.
Yep.
It is after the holidays.
Yep.
And soup is one of those things that can either be part of a meal, but honestly, when I'm having soup at home, soup is the meal.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if I'm at a restaurant, then maybe I'm doing something else as well, but at home, soup is the meal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's so flexible.
Yeah.
And honestly, there are so many soups that you can also pull together really quickly.
Yep.
It freezes beautifully. Mm-hmm. If you're one who enjoys batching your food and being able to pull that out at a later time, it's one of the great dishes of the world. It also stretches really easily. So if you have like unexpectedly, you're going to have somebody else coming over, you can fill out that soup quite easily to make it go just a little bit further. So
yeah.
We have different things. So I think this time I'm actually going to go first with mine this
time. Usually you're the grand finale because your recipes are so fancy.
But In our conversation, I feel like I've got things that I'm going to comment on with what you guys have. So I think maybe I shouldn't go first.
Now I'm
guessing myself.
You can go first. I'm so curious to hear about your recipe.
I'm going first this time.
Okay? I'm so excited.
I have for us a Finnish salmon soup, as in from Finland. That type of finish, okay?
I'm so here for this.
Oh, my goodness.
I love salmon soup so much.
I know, yes.
You don't hear a lot about Finnish cuisine.
You don't. And honestly, I wouldn't have probably paid a whole lot of attention to it, except that they tossed the word salmon in the title. Ooh. And so that caught my eye. I was like, oh, salmon soup? What's happening here? And then I don't even remember where I got this recipe at this point. I've had it a long time and I have modified it enough that, anyway. But the salmon is what caught my eye. And then I was looking at the ingredients and I'm like, well, those are all things that I love. Maybe I love Finnish food.
You might.
Or at least their soup. Yeah. So I have here still on my recipe noted that maybe the word for this is lohiketto. I don't know how to speak Finnish or whatever.
It's a very unique language. There's not a whole lot of other languages that are in that same family.
Yeah. So let me just tell you about the ingredients in this. And I think you're going to immediately understand why I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. So it's salmon, as you would expect from the name.
Yeah.
Salmon. Okay. Leek.
Oh.
Mushrooms. That was actually an addition that I did. I know I'm the one that added the mushrooms, but zero regrets. And surely the Finns must love mushrooms.
Surely
they must. So mushrooms, potatoes, carrot, kale.
Yes.
Yum.
Dill.
Aha.
Fresh dill.
Nice.
And heavy cream.
Ooh.
And your stock and some like juicy sort of things. But those are the highlights to like give you a sense of what you're getting there.
Yeah. I'm going to be making this recipe.
I mean,
sounds so good.
It's so good. And then, allspice, which is unusual. Allspice. And I feel like that might be one of the things that really makes it Finnish. I could be wrong. But I'm pretty sure I recall that the Nordic countries enjoy allspice. I don't know
That's
why.
So interesting.
It's not from that part of the world, but they like the allspice.
Sarah just said it. It's so interesting. It's an interesting flavor in an area that doesn't have that many interesting flavors.
You're right. It's true. So that's the concept of this soup. So things that I did, I know initially one of the things, as I recall way back when, the recipe might have encouraged you to make fish stock. And I was like, I don't have time to make fish stock. I don't live near the ocean. And no. So I was like, I'm going to use chicken stock. But then I was like, how could I make this a little bit more of the sea? And I thought, a jar of clam juice.
Aha. Nice.
You can get this on the grocery shelf. So a jar of clam juice adds a little bit more. And then very recently, I was like, I could add even a little bit more, little fishy je ne sais quoi. And that is fish sauce.
Instead of
using salt as the primary salt, I start by adding some fish sauce, which you don't, again, your brain doesn't read it as, this tastes like fish sauce. Don't taste the fish sauce straight. Okay. don't do that. It's not intended.
It smells like feet too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it does add something special.
Yeah. So that again adds just another little depth of sort of seafood flavor. Little umami burst, as we were discussing, I believe in the figgy pudding recipe, we were going into some umami discussions.
We talked extensively about umami.
So fish sauce is famous for bringing some of the umami. So it's a pretty straightforward soup to make. One of the key features, though, is that you start by poaching your salmon fillets.
Interesting.
And if they have in the stock, and so that again, you're sort of making a bit of a seafood stock that way. Mm-hmm. So start by poaching it in some of the stock, and just do it only until they're just cooked, and then remove them, because that way you can sort of preserve them in large chunks. They won't dissolve into little bits as you're stirring in the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
So start by poaching them. And then pull them out onto a plate and let them cool. Remove the skin if your salmon has skin on it, it probably does. Just at that point, it'll come off easily once it's cooked. You don't need the skin for this purpose, so you can just pitch it,
or you can eat it.
But if you're gonna do that, then maybe you'd want to like fry it or something. Because like poached salmon skin is not gonna be.
It'd be a little slimy.
Yeah.
Fried so up anyway, in some olive oil
it's
and
up
salt.
To you. I leave it to you to explore possibilities if you want those omega-3s. Okay. there are possibilities out there if you're like, I need all those omega-3s. They're great for you. So
it's true.
Anyway, so you're gonna do that, and then you're just gonna set aside the salmon. Okay. Set aside the salmon until a little bit later. Then you're going to saute your leeks and mushrooms in some butter until they're soft, and then add in the stock as well as the vegetables, like the hard vegetables, the potato and the carrot and the allspice and half of the dill. You're going to use half of it to finish the soup with, but half of it you'll use it while it's cooking. And then just let it simmer for about 10 minutes more. Or so until your potatoes are done. Then add. Now here, Rachel, this might be a question for you.
Oh.
Or actually, it might be a question for either of you. You guys are both heavy kale users, as am I. So my recipe, I was actually converting this back to being a make a whole pot of soup at once recipe. Because normally when I make this, I have at the bottom directions for if you want to make this into individual servings and you assemble the soup differently based on which way you're going.
Okay.
So because of that, I have on here frozen kale because it's so easy.
It is easy.
Is it a one-to-one conversion the weight of frozen kale to the weight of fresh kale if you're going to use it?
I would say the frozen's probably heavier.
Yeah. I think it's so much denser because kale, whether you're going to cook it or whether, like I sometimes do for salads, you like massage it with oil, it is going to compact by at least a third.
Right.
And so the frozen kale, you're going to get a lot more kale per cup than you would with the fresh.
If you're weighing it though, it won't be like
in a block, it's in a bag.
It won't be like drastically different, but your frozen kale is going to be a little bit heavier.
Okay, so if it's a half pound bag of frozen kale, what's that? You think like that's one or two bunches?
I would say one bunch.
One bunch? I'm going to...
Probably one bunch, yeah.
Probably one bunch.
Yeah.
Unless you like kale, and then it's two bunches.
And then you just put
one
to your heart's
large
desire.
One large bunch
of fresh kale. And that way someone who's like, I love kale, they're going to get an extra large bunch, or they're going to be like, oh, I know I want more than that. They'll use more. Mm-hmm. Someone who's like, I'll just use a regular size bunch.
Now, does the frozen kale, this is my problem generally with bagged kale. Mm-hmm. I like to get it fresh. I remove the stems before I chop the kale.
Yeah.
And bagged kale always includes the woody stems. And I hate that.
Exactly. My frozen kale has the stems
in
it.
When you guys see this recipe in the show notes, I will have fixed it based on this discussion, okay? The frozen kale is really nice, though, for the second part of my instructions, if you are trying to batch this individual servings.
It does
make it easy that way.
Yep.
But if you were going to be, if I were going to be making this for a group, there's no reason not to just use fresh kale because it's going to take about as much time as it would with a bag. What's helpful with the bag is for the part two of the instructions. Okay. So I will note that I have tried in the past using spinach. For those of you out there who are like, I don't like kale. What about spinach? Spinach is too delicate. Okay. It falls apart. It doesn't work, in my opinion. You could try it. I don't care for it in this function. In this
kale holds its texture better in a soup. Spinach gets really slimy.
Yeah, it does.
Kale's nice and hearty.
So
there are different kinds of kale too. If you don't like one kind, there might be a different kind that has a different flavor.
The ruffly kale can be a little harder sometimes. Yeah. I feel like the curly kale. But like a dinosaur kale.
Yeah. There's like Tuscan
kale. Yeah. Tuscan kale.
That's a little different.
And
baby kale probably wouldn't work because that would have the same problem as spinach.
Probably.
But yeah, there's different kinds of kale.
You're right. You could explore kale possibilities.
We love kale here.
Yes. So until the potatoes are tender, then you add kale and you're going to basically simmer it until the kale is tender, which still is not going to take that long. Kale is hearty, but it's not going to stand up to boiling liquid. No. It gives up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you're going to season with your fish sauce and add your reserved salmon pieces back to the soup and gently heat them until they're warmed through because they're already cooked. You don't want to overcook them or anything.
No.
Just warm them till they're heated through and then stir in the cream, the remaining dill, and let people adjust the salt and pepper to taste as they're serving. So this is the Finnish salmon soup. It is so, so good. It's so good.
I believe you.
Sounds really good.
It's just a magnificent soup. Okay. It's delicious. The whole allspice, it's whole. It's not ground. It's whole allspice. So it'll be floating in there. You can try and fish them out or you can just tell people, you know, this is part of the experience of this and just push them off to the side. If you crunch down on a whole allspice, it's fine. Whatever.
You won't die.
Or you could try and fish them out yourself right at the end. They float. So you'll see them at the top. So you could also sort of skim them out. But I usually don't bother. I just avoid them as I'm eating.
But I live alone.
So this is, yeah. So if you are going to make this because you're going to batch it for yourself and you want to freeze this for either serving one or two people, it freezes really nicely. And the key thing with that is that you're going to do a lot of it is going to be the same. You're still going to poach your salmon and reserve it and then saute your vegetables, but you're going to use half the amount of broth that it actually calls for in the recipe.
Mm, okay.
And so then cook your vegetables, but in the lesser amount of broth, and don't add the kale. So then you are ready to go directly into your freezer containers. You're going to put in a piece of salmon into each of the containers. Divide your frozen kale directly into the container, and also the dill. Pour the clam juice directly into the container, just because you might as well. It's easier. So it's 2 ounces per container. Then you take the vegetables that you had been simmering, divide those. But since you have less broth, it's easier to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
Broth, you'll end up with about 3/4 cup of broth per container. And then just freeze it like that. It'll have it. It should have enough broth that it can cover the stuff that's in your container. Freeze it there. Then when you go to reheat it, I am a huge fan, and this gets into some of the soups that we'll talk about in a little bit with like Sarah's template. I have a feeling I would be adapting her templated idea. I'm a huge fan of the 8-ounce containers of bone broth.
Mm.
For me, it's a pantry staple. I keep them because I can just make a single serving of soup at any time without committing to a whole quart.
Yep.
And sometimes I don't know how quickly I'll be able to go through a whole quart container. The 8-ounce containers of bone broth, I love them. I use them all the time. So when you could totally add in the broth at this point if you wanted, if you were like, no, that's not my life. I like to do it the other way. Fine. Go ahead. Add in the broth before you freeze it. No problem. But if you freeze it with the lesser amount, then you just add a container of the bone broth. Bone broth is also nice because it gives you a little protein boost.
Yeah.
And so add that in while you are then reheating the soup. And then when you're finished, in the bowl that you're going to drink, eat this soup out of, before you pour in the soup, just pour a little slush of cream right into the bowl, okay? Nice. Because your cream doesn't need to cook.
No. Yeah.
So just pour the cream right into your bowl and then pour the soup on top of the cream and voila, it's all come together. And then you have more room in your freezer if you don't have an enormous freezer because you haven't frozen twice as much broth.
Yeah. So that is very key. Freezer space is premium.
It does get down to a premium. So that is the finished salmon soup. If it's really great as a freezer easy thing to pull out. So if you are someone who cooks for one or two, if you're making this for a family, you should just eat it when you make it. It seems like freezing a whole batch of soup for a family probably isn't the way to go.
By the time you saw it, you could have just remade it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I love it so much. I haven't made it this season yet, and it's coming.
Yeah.
Possibly this week.
Ooh.
You'll know if you get paid because you'll have a beautiful picture of it. So so that is my finished salmon soup. Mm.
Well, that is impossible to top, so I'm not going to try. Mm. But I am going to see your one soup and raise you a series of soups.
I can't even wait. Because I know I have a feeling, based on the brief mention you did as we were discussing in advance, that there's some seafood involved in at least one.
There is.
We all have seafood.
So this is my winter series of soups, which I present to you. This is like the Three Little Bears, or no, the story of the three bears. The mama bear, the papa bear, and the baby bear. And the one that's just right. But what's just right depends on where you are. Because over the holidays, and full disclosure for our listeners, we are recording this before Christmas. So
yeah,
one of these soups is in my near future. We always like to have soup on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
This is a
tradition.
This is a Bomberger family tradition.
Bomberger family tradition.
Because we all go to church on Christmas Eve. And used to be we had 2 services, one early, one late. And so having a big dinner on Christmas Eve doesn't really work. But you want something special, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I got this tradition from my husband's grandparents, who would host the whole family on Christmas Eve and serve one of the soups, two soups. One of them was always oyster stew. This was the tradition.
My grandparents had this tradition as well.
Yeah, and the other one changed. Uh-huh. It was often like a chicken bisque, something, you know, creamy and hearty and not seafood.
Yeah.
For the people that didn't like the seafood. Yeah. And then the whole table was taken up with relish trays and cookies and, you know, just a real nice little smorgasbord.
Uh-huh.
So we started doing this. It's a great tradition. You can put the soups on, go to church, come back, rewarm them, put out the relish trays. Good to go. Mm-hmm. Have a really festive meal at the end of what is usually a very long day.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
So we usually do an oyster stew of some kind, but I like to take this kind of liberally because I like chowder. I like chowder a lot.
I love chowder.
And probably 6 or 7 years ago now, I got a recipe from a fellow chaplain wife that I went to a party at her house, just loved it. And I was like, I need that recipe. Mm-hmm. She sent it to me and I've made it several times. And you know what? One of those recipes that you can sort of decide which seafood goes into it.
Yeah.
And so I can definitely include the obligatory oysters, fulfill tradition, and also have an amazing bowl of soup.
Okay.
So here is the recipe. Hat tip to my friend Carrie Hahn. She gave it to me and I've used it several times. So you're going to start by sauteing together over medium heat about 5 minutes, 1 stick of butter, 1/2 diced onion, teaspoon of garlic, salt or powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of thyme. Get those all nice and sauteed. Then you're going to mix in 1/2 cup of flour to thicken it, 1 cup, 1/2 and 1/2, 2 cups milk. This is very heavy, heavy on the dairy.
Soup.
I love it.
Ugh. And then we add to that 4 ounces, 1/2 block of cream cheese.
Holy cow! A stick of cow! And 1/2 block of cream cheese.
This is a holiday soup.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. Keep going.
Then, because it's a chowder, you got to have some potatoes. Uh-huh. I usually have a ton of potatoes, but no, this recipe calls for 1 can of cream of potato soup.
Wow. Okay.
Here's your potatoes.
Yes.
1/2 teaspoon black pepper. 8-ounce can of minced clams with juice.
Okay.
8-ounce can of tiny shrimp with juice.
Uh-huh.
16 ounces of flaked crab. You can use artificial crab.
Okay.
And then 16 ounces of frozen salad-sized extra small shrimp.
Okay.
All right.
And then you can add milk as needed or to get it to the right consistency or to reheat leftovers with. Yeah. And just heat until it's hot throughout. And like I said, you can mix and match your seafood.
Sure.
Like if you want to use oysters, you can use oysters. If you want to use, you can use flaked pieces of fish. You could use salmon in this chowder.
Absolutely.
But it is such, like, when you're hearing the recipe, you're like, stick of butter, 1/2 stick of cream cheese, 1/2 and 1/2. What is this soup? And then you taste it and you're like, I understand now.
Oh, yes. Right.
Oh, yes.
It's so good. And I will say, because I live on the Eastern Seaboard, in the Mid-Atlantic states, we have favorite flavor profiles here. And so whenever I make this soup, I top it with a little Old Bay seasoning because you can't have a chowder without Old Bay.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Just adds a little zing to it.
Yeah.
So there is soup number one. This is the festive soup, the holiday soup. But if you eat too much of soup number one, you're going to need soup number two, the recovery soup.
Yep. All right.
So a few years back, I experienced a season in which I had significant amounts of reflux. My stomach was not very happy with me for a while. I still have some issues with it. But whenever I do, I pull out a recipe that I actually created during this season of tummy troubles.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I don't really have a name for it. I guess it's a chicken vegetable soup. I call it get better soup because it's really, really good for your stomach.
Okay.
And basically, when I was going through that, I took all the foods I could eat and I put them in a pot.
Welcome to my life, Rachel.
Yeah, exactly.
So I make all my food.
If anyone is struggling with some holiday-related dyspepsia, this is a great recipe to pull out, and it's very gentle on your system.
Yes.
So here's how I... Let's see if I can... I'm going from memory because, again, I created this recipe.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to start by dicing some chicken and some carrots and celery. Some aromatic vegetables. You are going to leave out the onions and the garlic. Have no place in this recipe.
Yep. Uh-huh.
But it's amazing how when you leave them out, the other flavors, the carrots and the celery, really pop. So you're going to put a little olive oil in a pan or in a pot and saute your chicken, your carrots, your celery.
Okay.
And and mushrooms. You got to add mushrooms. What's that?
This raw chicken or cooked chicken?
This will be raw chicken. Okay, you're gonna basically brown your chicken with your vegetables.
I'm with you now.
Mm-hmm. And yes, mushrooms are a nice addition to this. You're gonna brown them until the chicken is cooked through and the vegetables are starting to get tender. They don't have to be cooked through because you're gonna be making a soup around them.
Exactly.
And then you're gonna add, if you are fancy, chicken broth, and if you are not fancy, water and chicken bouillon.
Yes. Both legitimate options.
I have done both. I've done the bouillon more often because it's just always in the pantry.
Yeah.
I don't have to make a special trip.
Yeah.
And then you are going to let that simmer for a while. You can add a few herbs. A lot of herbs are not very, very, you know, you don't want to add anything too spicy. But I have found that thyme, either fresh or dried, is a nice addition.
Yeah.
I love turmeric, which is very mild, but has those anti-inflammatory properties.
Yes.
And then also parsley is really great for the stomach.
Yep.
And
it makes it pretty.
Yes, it does.
More golden.
Well, speaking of pretty, this is where you can add your kale, chopped kale. And also I like to add chopped cabbage to the soup.
Yes.
Cabbage is one of those foods that is just simply miraculous when it comes to making your stomach feel better. So yes, we'll add some kale and some cabbage, let that simmer for a while, maybe adjust a little more salt. You're not gonna be putting pepper in the soup, sorry.
Okay.
There's no pepper. And then towards the very end, I will add in some sort of starchy something.
Okay.
Usually my favorite to add is barley. Add a handful of barley.
Yeah.
I've also done rice. You can do egg noodles, but if you're like me and tend to be pulling this soup out every day for lunch for a week, those egg noodles are going to get a little soggy by the end. The barley tends to hold up better.
Okay, that makes sense.
As a leftover. And then as soon as your barley's cooked through, your soup is done. And I like to serve this with, like, I don't know, maybe like a plain tortilla or something, you know, something really, really simple and bland. But it's such a nourishing soup. And the thing is, by exercising restraint when it comes to your seasonings, it makes it so that the flavors that are there are so much more noticeable.
The ingredients
really come through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that is my get better recovery soup for if I've been a little too hard on my system over the holidays.
Wonderful.
And that brings me, so that would be like the Papa Bear soup and the Mama Bear soup. I have the Baby Bear soup.
Yeah, now you're.
And
buttons.
Actually, this last soup literally looks like baby food. So yeah, perfect.
Yeah, it's late January, and you're just like, it's dark all the time.
Yes,
what can I do?
Mid January, the post holiday blahs have set in, and you just want to sip on some liquid sunshine.
Yes,
that is when you bring out a curried butternut squash soup.
Ooh.
The curry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I love butternut.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And I actually made this one today and had it for lunch. And it is just as good as can be. So I'll tell you how I make it. I actually do two different versions of this soup. One with curry and one without.
Okay.
So you're going to start. And I know a lot of people prepare butternut squash in different ways. Sarah, you use it frozen a lot. But my favorite way to do it is to split it down the middle, put it upside down in a pan of water and roast it in the oven.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because it just caramelizes some of the flavors a little bit. And it's so, like, it takes me 2 minutes to prep it. And then I just leave it go for 45 minutes and I've got my squash ready to work with. So I'm going to start with my butternut squash. And then when I pull it out of the oven, I'm going to start sauteing a bit of a diced onion in some olive oil or butter, your choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can add a little garlic. This is your stomach is better now, hopefully. So you can go back to onions and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And then put the squash in with some chicken broth and let it all simmer for a little while. And then you're going to, you've got some options at this point. You've got to get that squash blended.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
You can either use an immersion blender, which I don't have. You can do what I did today, which is pour the whole kit and caboodle into a blender and blend it that way and then put it back in the pot. That's what I did today. Worked pretty well. Or you can do what I actually prefer to do, which is send it through a Foley mill. Because the Foley mill does just a little bit better job of getting out the stringiness.
Okay.
And just sort of pulverizes it. But my Foley mill is on its last legs, so I decided to use my blender today.
Okay. Can you explain what that is for people?
Foley mill. Oh my goodness. It's my one of my favorite kitchen toys. I need a new one though so badly because I've overused it. It is, imagine if you will, a saucepan that has holes in the bottom and it's got a blade and a handle, and you turn it round and round and round and it forces the stuff through the holes. It is great for like pureeing applesauce, processing pumpkin. There's lots of, I've done tomato paste through it. It's a really useful piece of kit. Not many people have one, but if you do, you know what I'm talking about. Erin, do you have a Foley mill?
I don't. Oh. I have an immersion blender.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But like the gardeners in my life, I feel like are the ones who are more likely to have a Foley mill because they're often trying to, puree it, make their own tomato purees and things along those lines. It's also great for making baby food, right?
Yes.
Isn't that basic? I feel like that's
That would be good for that. Because it sort of strains and blends at the same time. Yeah. So if you're throwing stuff in a blender, your whatever fibers were in there to start with are going to be in there at the end. But the Foley mill sort of takes out the biggest fibrous stuff as you go.
Great.
So
interesting.
Anyway, so you're going to send your squash and onion mixture through some form of blending. Put it back in the pan. Now you've got your plain and simple option. You can add a little more chicken broth, add some milk or cream, add some more salt or seasonings if you like, and your soup is done. Or you can go the curried route, which is what I did today.
Okay.
And at this point, you're going to add some sort of curry. I used the golden curry little tablets. Okay. I could have just used one, but I had two, so I just tossed in two. It was a little... And I added, in place of milk or cream, I added a can of full-fat coconut milk.
Love it.
And let all of that simmer and melt and stir together. Put it in a bowl and served it with buttered ciabatta.
Ooh, nice.
And that was an amazing lunch. Even my kids agreed. That they were like, yes, this is creamy and delicious and very much like eating sunshine, which is what you want.
Yes.
In January.
Exactly.
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 Yes.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
So those are my Papa Bear soup, my Mama Bear soup.
Excellent. I fully endorse your soup choices.
I love soup. I do. Uh-huh. In the summertime, it's salad time. But for the chilly 6 months of the year, it's like the salads don't happen as much. It's just soup time.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because soup and salad are both year-round endeavors in the Golseth house. We don't go a week without eating multiple soups and multiple salads. But that's because my food options are very limited. But this was a very exciting iron ladle for me because I live on soup. I take soup very seriously. I eat it 5 days a week for lunch, year-round. It is my life.
You were so happy when we said we do soup.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Like, I don't have to think about this one. I had soup for lunch today. I'll have soup for lunch tomorrow. It's amazing. I have loved soup for a long time. We're talking about clam chowder. Oh, man. I wish I could eat it, but dairy would kill me at this point. But boy, clam chowder is so good.
I'm curious, though, would either of the soups, the other two soups, would those be workable for you?
Well, it's funny you say that because your Get Better soup is eerily similar to the soup that I make anyway.
It's your regular.
It is my regular chicken soup.
Sarah's always trying to get better.
Right.
Yeah. It's very close to my staple chicken soup. So it's interesting. You guys are talking about making soup probably in a very traditional way that everybody else knows how to make soup. I make soup all the time in my Instant Pot.
Yeah.
Every day. Oh. It is so easy.
Uh-huh. I'm like, pull out the Foley Mill and Sarah's like, Instant Pot.
Instant Pot. Uh-huh. Every day of my life. It is my favorite kitchen tool. I use it so much.
What's your method?
We finally broke one and we had to buy a new one.
Oh.
And I love it so much. Okay. So Instant Pot soup is super duper easy. The easiest one is actually my salmon soup. I love salmon soup so much.
Okay.
I did not think that fish and soup would be delicious, but boy, there's just it's just so rich, salmon soup. I also leave my skin in it. So I got my omega-3s
That's
in my
right. soup.
So the recipe, there's just a formula that we follow.
Okay.
And it can be endlessly adaptable to whatever you want. The other thing, Rachel, that you said that is a very real rule for all of my soup is that I don't use any kind of broth, like store-bought broth or any broth at all. Mm-hmm. I use very little spice, no onion, no garlic. Mm-hmm. It's straight up salt and pepper. And these recipes sound very bland, but everyone that I feed my soup to is like, Sarah, this is so good. What do you do?
I'm
like,
highlighting the ingredients.
It's just meat and vegetables, guys. It's literally... That's it.
Meat and vegetables are delicious. And sometimes when you clear out all the clutter of other flavors, they can pop just all the much more.
Yeah. It's so good. So my general framework for my single soup, and we mostly double it, but not entirely when Luther and I have it together. And these are like meal soups.
Okay.
These are large. I have a 24 ounce Stanley container that I bring with me to work, and it is full of soup every day, which sounds like a lot. And I have a big bowl. It's a lot of soup, but it's so good. Okay. So 4 ounces of meat for a single, 8 would be a lot. 4 ounces of meat. Yeah. So I rotate through chicken, beef, and salmon. I usually do a little bit more. Chicken, sometimes I do a little bit more. But I can only get so much meat before it doesn't fit in my Stanley. So I do have a cutoff. So I use frozen salmon and then fresh, like grass-fed beef and organic chicken. But 4 ounces of meat, 8 ounces of carrots, 4 ounces of either peas or beans, frozen.
Okay.
Fresh carrots, fresh baby carrots, frozen peas or beans. 100 grams of cabbage. I don't know why I do that one in grams and not ounces, but 100 grams. It started at some point. Now
is that like a handful? Because that's how I would measure it.
Probably, yes.
Okay. A handful of cabbage.
I weigh stuff just so I know it'll fit in my container because I will go overboard if I don't weigh it. The best way that I love to do it is to get a head of cabbage and chop it up really chunky. Mm-hmm. And freeze it. And then I just use it out of my freezer in my soup because if it's chunky, it'll keep some of its shape still. If it's too, like if you get the like coleslaw style cabbage, it'll just kind of disintegrate, which you want a little bit of that to happen because that adds to the broth.
Sort of but a if little
it,
body.
Yeah. If it disintegrates too much, it's a little weird.
Okay.
So like some chunk and a little bit disintegrated. And then the broth, quote, butternut squash makes an amazing like vegetable soup broth. So
I
purposely want it to disintegrate in my soup because that's what's going to make the broth nice and thick.
Uh-huh.
I don't ever actually weigh the butternut, so I can't tell you how much I put in. It's whatever looks good to my eyes.
Measure with your heart.
I do measure my butternut with my heart. I love winter squash so much, guys. My countertop right now is, we don't have room for anything because it's full of winter squash at the moment. I live on it.
No judgment here.
So like a reasonable amount, it's probably also like a handful. It's probably around 100 grams-ish. I don't really know. Water. So for a single soup, I usually just do whatever the absolute minimum is in the Instant Pot. Mm-hmm. It's about a cup. And then I use 2 teaspoons of what we call soup salt, which is like chunkier gray Celtic salt.
Okay.
That measurement would not be the same with like much more finely ground salt. Sure. That would be way too much. Definitely salt to taste. I eat a lot of, like, I add a lot of salt to my food because I don't get salt anywhere else in my diet. Mm. And also the Celtic salt has a lot of really nice minerally flavor. Mm. And then pepper to taste. So, like, that's the general framework of what I eat every day.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I've got beef. Let's see. Today's soup is a little bit different. So, I'll talk about that in a second. But my usual, like, chicken, beans, cabbage, butternut, carrots. excellent. Uh-huh. My favorite is the salmon. It is the easiest one to make because I put the salmon in the Instant Pot frozen, and then I put all the vegetables in, and then I do, oh, I forgot olive oil. I put a tablespoon of olive oil in here too.
Of course.
For my single soup. Of course.
Okay. Yeah.
Almost forgot that.
Yeah.
But I put the salmon in, and then I just put the vegetables in, and then the water and the oil and the salt and pepper. Uh-huh. And then I cap it. And that's like, I do no prep. I just dump it in, turn the Instant Pot on, set it to steam zero, and that's it.
Okay.
And then it cooks, and then it's done. And then I take it out and chop everything up and dump it in my container, and I'm good to go. It is the easiest meal of my life.
Wow.
It's amazing. The beef and the chicken, I cook those first. Instant Pots are fun because you can saute stuff in them before you put everything in. So the beef and the chicken, I put the olive oil and the salt and pepper and the butternut in. So the butternut also browns, which gets it that nice caramely flavor. Oh, it's so good. So I cook all the way through the meats for the chicken and beef, but same process, then dump everything in and set them to steam zero and let them cook.
Okay.
It's so easy. So the one I had today is a little bit different because it's essentially beef and butternut soup with an extra vegetable. So we do the normal amount of beef, but then I just put a whole bunch of butternut in it. Again, I don't weigh it. I measure winter squash with my heart. So it's just a lot of beef and butternut. And then we usually have peas with that one.
Okay.
But same kind of concept. It's excellent. The one that I would like to tell you a short little tiny story, though, about using these soups with my nieces and nephews, because when we go visit them, they like to eat anti-Sarah food. Because
that's so sweet.
Aww.
Because it's not their usual diet.
Yeah.
But they love the food that I make because it's just really simple food. And so one time, I don't remember when, it was a couple of years ago, we were going to make soup for them. And so Luther and I were talking about what we were going to make and how we were going to like convince them that soup would be delicious. So it ended up being called exploded meatball soup.
Oh my goodness.
Which is now still what we call this soup, exploded meatball soup.
Okay.
It's the same concept.
It's all about the branding. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
It's just beef, beans, carrots, butternut, cabbage.
Okay.
But we made I think it was like 2 pounds of beef and just like scaled everything up.
Okay.
And it takes such a long time to cook in the Instant Pot. And you need like the big instant, like the 8-quart Instant Pot to make this much soup.
Uh-huh.
But that is now called exploded meatball soup. And
awesome.
The kids loved it, except for maybe the peas and beans. Those aren't always a hit with the kids, but the beef definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they eat Auntie Sarah soup when we go visit them.
Love it.
I just really love soup. Uh-huh. I can't really do leftovers, so I have to make all of my food fresh every day.
Yeah.
And so soups have just been a lifesaver for me. And the really fun part, I know this isn't a soup thing, but I can take these when I travel and just convert them into unsoups. So I just take all the ingredients and make them in a frying pan instead of making them in an Instant Pot.
Nice.
And my soups turn into stir fries, and it's just so versatile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're unsoups.
Yeah.
Unsoups. the amazing brothless soup.
Right.
Yeah, so there's my soup story. I love soup.
Fantastic.
I think I'm going to have soup for supper tonight. Yeah, pretty sure.
No, I'm stir fry today. But I had soup for lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had soup for lunch, and I'll probably have the same soup for supper.
Because
it was really good.
Good stuff.
Well, and as you are coming, as we're tiptoeing closer and closer to the Lenten season, when the soup supper rings supreme, you can bring some new ideas.
Yeah.
I might have to take a finished salmon soup to our church's Lenten soup supper this year. I feel like I would be very popular.
I think you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Ladies, we want to know. We must know your favorite soup recipes. I'm sure by the time we get to this episode, I probably will have already put a prompt in the lounge to ask for this before this episode drops. If future Sarah has done that, great. If not,
I'm so confused. When are we?
I don't know. This podcast drops in mid-January, which is exactly the timing that we're talking about.
Yep.
So there may have already been a poll. If there was, we can include it in the show notes. But otherwise, we'd love to know your favorite soups.
Yeah.
Be sure to share those with us in the comments on the this episode, or I'm sure I'll be asking about this on Instagram too. So there will be a place to share your favorite soups on either of those places, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group and at Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Instagram. We want to celebrate soup with you so much. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Soup's on. I love soup.
I love soup too.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give.